Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome back, everyone. In this episode, we have a three-parter. First of all, Disney just reported earnings, and the stock is down 10% on the day. We have the data, we have the numbers. We're going to be taking a look at what happened with Disney and why the stock is down. We also had Jim Cramer on CNBC Mad Money yesterday talking about none other than Texas Roadhouse. He did an entire segment on Texas Roadhouse. Now, obviously, I have some thoughts on this segment. I want to do a reaction. We'll be playing some clips from it and going through what Jim Cramer decided to highlight. And then finally, we have the Story Fund, my secondary portfolio that we haven't done an update on for a while. So we're going to be looking at the Story Fund and seeing how my performance has been compared against the S&P 500. So we have a lot to get to in this episode. Let's go ahead and jump in. Now let's go ahead and start off with Disney. I'll go through the good and bad of this quarter. We can look at the earnings report here and look at the most important aspects of this previous quarter. The earnings per share was a beat, so that's a good thing, and they beat on their revenue, or at least they came in line with their revenue expectations. So overall, the top and bottom line were good. They had a great quarter this last quarter. Another thing that I think is a good positive is they reiterated the $8 billion of free cash flow. Right here, they say they're going to have $8 billion this year. Now, like I pointed out before, if we look at Disney's free cash flow, $8 billion is right here. So this brings you back into the Marvel era, into the pre-COVID era of them generating a lot of free cash flow. It'll be right there. That's good. This is good news for Disney. So as an investor in Disney, I would look at the $8 billion and be very happy that they say they're going to make that. I'd look at the earnings per share and revenue share and be happy about that. Another thing I think is important to track for Disney is the total subscribers, and they gave us an update this quarter. If we look at the most recent quarter here on Qualtrm, we can see the total number of subscribers per service. For example, with Disney Plus Domestic, so this is just like USA and Canada, Disney Plus Domestic had a nice bump up from 46.1 to 54 million. So they jumped up last quarter, which I think is a big positive. If we look at international, this bumped down a little bit. So it went from 65 to 62. They did a price increase. That's why they lost a few subscribers. So that's not a positive, but it's still not terrible. If we look at Hotstar, this is the least meaningful service because it doesn't make much money per subscriber. This went down a little bit from 38 million to 36. But again, Hotstar is not the most important thing. The Disney Plus Domestic is far more important. Then we look at Hulu, and this actually gained a few subscribers from 49.7 to 50.2. So overall, I view this as positive. Their streaming subscribers are stabilizing and even gaining in their most important markets. When we break this down to the average revenue per subscriber, we can look at the Disney Plus Domestic. This went down slightly, only 15 cents. But Disney Plus Domestic makes $8 per month. We look at Disney Plus International. This is why they lost subscribers. This went up big time from 5.9 to 6.6. So they did a big price increase that cost them some subscribers, but it makes their average revenue per subscriber go up. So it's a net benefit. Now, like I said, with Disney Plus Hotstar, they only make 70 cents per subscriber, 70 cents a month. So this is not a meaningful portion of the business. They're making pennies on these subscribers. If we look at this in comparison, this is what it looks like. In the orange here, in the yellow, we have Disney Plus Domestic. In the blue, we have International. And then that sliver on top is Hotstar. So Hotstar is not a meaningful portion of revenue. And then we get to Hulu, which is massive. The average revenue per month for Hulu is $95 per month, but even Hulu did move up quarter over quarter from $93 to $95. So far this quarter looks decent. The revenue's growing, the earnings per share is growing, the amount of subscribers in different regions is growing, and the average revenue per subscriber is even ticking upwards. All the metrics look really good. And then on top of that, they reiterated their most important metric, the $8 billion of free cash flow this year. So I'm happy if I'm a Disney shareholder at this point. But there are some weaknesses here. They said that the theme parks would be flat in the June quarter when the analysts were projecting 12% gains year over year. So the analysts thought that there's going to be 12% operating income gains, but theme parks are going to be flat. That's where you get the 10% down. And then to add on to that, the CFO recently said, just in an interview, that there's some normalization of post-COVID demand. The CFO is basically saying that now families have more opportunities to vacation elsewhere instead of visiting Disney Park, and that's lowering their amount of demand and their pricing power. So instead of Disney Parks growing operating income double digits, it's going to be flat. And that is where you get the 10% down, the disappointment on the forecast. Now, even with this disappointing guidance on the parks, the stock should not be down 10% on this earnings. Disney had decent earnings. They beat most of their metrics, and they still reiterated their most important metric, which is their free cash flow generation. So I think the stock should be next to flat on this earnings. Now, moving on from Disney, we have to get into this next news. We had Jim Cramer from Mad Money do an episode where the primary thing he talked about was none other than Texas Roadhouse. Now, of course, if you follow the channel, you'll know that I've owned Texas Roadhouse as a stock for years. I've owned this company, and it's been one of my best investments. In fact, right now, it's grown to my third largest position, $72,000 with $37,000 in gains. This has truly been a terrific investment. Not only has it gained a lot in capital appreciation, but the company pays out a hefty yield, so I've been getting dividends at the same time. Now, anytime a national news network covers a stock I own, I like to pay attention, but especially if it's a stock that doesn't get talked about too much, one like Texas Roadhouse. So I wanted to tune in and see what Jim Cramer had to say. We'll go ahead and just highlight a couple clips here. This is from last night.
Spent a lot of time talking about restaurant earnings because we're seeing a big divide between the winners and losers in the group. It's pretty fascinating. But you know what? I never got around to the best restaurant quarter of all. Yes, Texas Roadhouse.
That is true what he says. The first thing he points out is that we're seeing a huge divide between the winners and losers. Absolutely true. This isn't a case where the entire industry is doing well. There's so many restaurants right now going out of business, right? There's the Red Lobster. There's all these different companies that are struggling. And then there's massive winners. Texas Roadhouse is the biggest winner by far in the restaurant category. And I don't believe that that's by random chance. If you look through the fundamentals and you study the business, there's reasons why they're winning.
Which reported a beautiful quarter last Thursday night. They sent the stock up 3.6% on Friday and then another 2.5% today. That's a good one. Tonight, I want to put a spotlight on this one because Texas Roadhouse has delivered a series of great results despite being in the full service space at a time when quick serve outfits have generally been the winners. This thing's been roaring, though, climbing from less than $100 late last October to $167 and change today. People don't talk about it because it's not in New York City, I guess. I don't know. So let me walk you through what.
He says people don't talk about it. Jim, I talk about it. I talk about Texas Roadhouse. You got to subscribe to the channel, man. You're missing out here. We can have Jim Cramer as a subscriber. I'll get you some good stocks to follow, Jim. Ones that your viewers will enjoy owning. But I've been talking about Texas Roadhouse for years. Literally years. Tweeting about it. In fact, I've had some viral tweets. One of them that I compared Texas Roadhouse to Google got viewed well over 1 million times. So this has been a stock I've talked about. In fact, one of the first videos I made on Texas Roadhouse was... this was 3 years ago. 3 years ago, I made this video. Welcome everyone to Joseph Carlson After Hours. In this video, I'm going to be talking about a company that I'm going to be buying this week quite a bit. In fact, I plan on making it one of my core holdings in the passive income account. The company is called Texas Roadhouse. It is a restaurant. And I'm going to go over why I'm picking this one over the other many options and why I'm buying restaurants at all, even though it's a highly competitive industry that offers very little moats. That was back 3 years ago, and I've made numerous videos since that point. So it is true, Jim, most people are not talking about Texas Roadhouse, but there is one person that has been sounding the alarm for this stock for a number of years.
This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, Leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
What makes this story so compelling? Because it is textbook. Texas Roadhouse has nearly 700 locations, with 45 locations for Bubba's 33, think burgers, pizza, wings, and beer, and 11 stores for its new fast casual concept, Jaggers. The vast majority are company-owned, giving them more control over everything from menu pricing to staff levels. It's kind of like Chipotle. They pay extremely generous bonuses for restaurant-level managers who deliver good results. Put it all together and the stock's been...
See how he keeps comparing it to Chipotle? They're wholly owned. They're staffed by the company itself, like Chipotle. There's similarities between these two companies. It's the reason that I've gone into Texas Roadhouse and Chipotle. They both are mostly wholly owned restaurants, and they run a very similar playbook, even though they're in different segments of the industry.
And a fabulous growth story ever since it came public way back in 2004, but nobody talks about it. For me,
I've been talking about it, Jim. I have. Subscribe to the channel. You'll get some good stocks. I'll hook you up with some good stocks.
Hey, the most impressive thing about Texas Roadhouse is that the stock's been a juggernaut lately, even as most full-service chains have struggled. How do they do it? Okay, simple. Texas Roadhouse has figured out how to offer high-quality food, including steaks, at reasonable prices, creating one of the most compelling value propositions for consumers in the whole full-service dining category.
He nails it. That's the investment thesis. Go to different restaurants. Go to Chili's and any Darden restaurant. Go to Longhorn Steakhouse. You know, go to anyone and compare it to Texas Roadhouse, and you'll know that the value proposition is a lot better with Texas Roadhouse. They have figured out how to offer steaks, good ones, that they will cook right or they'll recook them for you. And they do that cheap. It's relatively cheap. It's a place that the average person can take their family to and not feel like they're getting robbed. That is a great value proposition. And as Jim goes on to highlight, this value proposition is even compared to places like McDonald's.
Now, we know that lower-end consumers are pretty cash-strapped, right? Right now? And this earnings season, we found out that the restaurants that can do well are the ones that give people a good meal at a good price. That's the common thread we've seen from some of the strongest reports, like Domino's Pizza or Brinker International, Wingstop. Others that raise prices too aggressively without a clear value proposition, here I'm including McDonald's, and yes, Starbucks, are now suffering from traffic declines as customers vote with their feet. This one exception to this theme, though, which is Chipotle, which has raised prices aggressively, particularly in California because of that minimum wage issue, yet has seen no deterioration in demand at all.
He highlights that the only other company, aside from Texas Roadhouse, that has raised prices aggressively and not seen a decline in traffic is Chipotle, which happens to be my only other restaurant stock I own. So again, you can say that this is just random luck, that these two companies are doing well, but I argue that if you study the companies, you'll be able to differentiate between the ones that are likely to do well and the ones that are likely to do poorly. Texas Roadhouse and Chipotle both offer a better value proposition for the customer than almost any other restaurant, and that's why they're excelling right now. But even though they're similar, they still have some notable differences.
Wow. Now, Texas Roadhouse, on the other hand, has followed the more typical blueprint for what works. The stock actually bottomed late October after the company reported a big earnings miss, their third earnings miss in four quarters. Not good. But Texas Roadhouse rallied in response because Wall Street was focused on their terrific revenue momentum. In late October, they delivered 8.2% same-store sales growth. Wall Street was only looking for 7.5%. Even as the rest of the industry was starting to lose steam, on the traffic at least, Texas Roadhouse never did. Put it another way, last year the restaurants were still dealing with plenty of inflationary cost pressures, and many decided to raise prices in order to pass those customers on to you. Texas Roadhouse did take some price, but they were much more measured with their price hikes because they really...
That's accurate. So a lot of restaurants, when they do price hikes, they're doing these crazy price hikes where they redo their menu, and all of a sudden you're kind of shell-shocked when you come in and it's just so much more expensive. And the way that Texas Roadhouse does it is so much smarter. They raise prices 2% at a time. Now, if you go to get a family meal one day and then you go back like 2 months later and it's 2% more expensive, are you really going to notice a difference? No, most people don't notice a difference. So when they're implementing these 2% price increases like every 8 months, that's a much better pricing strategy than what a lot of other restaurants are doing, where they're increasing prices by 10% or 15%. So the strategy that they do to implement this is far better than their competitors.
I really care about giving people good value for their money. That decision hurt their earnings in 2023, but the strong same-store sales showed that the customers liked it. They had a little more vision. Ever since the stock bottom in late October, the company's reported two more quarters, one in February and one last Thursday, and on both occasions, they made real progress on getting costs under control while continuing to deliver fantastic same-store sales. In short, it's all coming together for this Texas Roadhouse. Now, they didn't raise prices aggressively when the rest of the industry was doing that, and now the customer base is rewarding them for it. Now, doesn't this make sense, right? They didn't raise the prices. People went there. The other guys raised prices. They stopped going to them. When Texas Roadhouse...
It's funny. I mean, I agree with everything he's saying here. Texas Roadhouse didn't raise prices, but they just took all the customers of other restaurants. Their traffic levels went up an incredible amount. They had an increase in foot traffic, and because they're so good at turning over tables, they clean those tables fast, they have a good staff, that they can get people in and out quickly, which means that they can turn a lot of tables in a night. They can make a lot more money with the same prices by having more traffic.
Reported in February, it had a 10.1% comp restaurant sales growth. That's incredible. That was for the full year, with more than half of that increase coming from traffic improvements, more people. When you add in the company's steady new store growth, their total revenue grew 15.4% last year. And for all the hand-wringing about the earnings misses, Texas Roadhouse still saw its earnings per share grow by 14.3% last year. Management's initial guidance for 2024 included calls for positive same-store sales growth and store week growth of roughly 8%. Store week growth is a quirky metric that accounts for new locations. At the same time, they talked about mid-single-digit commodity cost inflation and labor inflation. Put it all together, and the stock jumped 10% in response. The numbers were just that good. Fast forward to last Thursday night, Texas Roadhouse reported yet another blowout. This time they had 8.4% same-store sales growth. Wall Street was looking for 7.8. Some of the best comps we've seen from any major restaurant chain this earnings season. CEO Jerry Moore.
8.4 same-store sales growth is just incredible for a restaurant right now. A lot of places would love to just keep it flat. Starbucks, McDonald's, they're struggling to just keep theirs flat, and Texas Roadhouse is growing 8.4%, guiding for the high single digits this year. Incredible stuff by them.
Morgan noted that strong traffic trends continue to drive sales growth. Crucially, Texas Roadhouse's modest price increases have taken effect just as some of the cost inflation's fading away. The restaurant margin came in 17.4%, up 150 basis points year over year, and 50 basis points above what the analysts expected. That's sensational. Even better, Texas Roadhouse gave us some bullish updates on the full year. First, management disclosed that through the first 5 weeks of the current quarter, same-store sales were up 9.3%. So you got a meaningful acceleration versus the first quarter. For the full year, they also lowered their commodity inflation, cutting it from 5% to 3%. What a story.
He's right. Right as their price increases really took effect, a lot of their input costs went down. So their margins are going up at the same time. And on Texas Roadhouse's earnings call, they always say that they never price things based on their input costs. They know that those fluctuate up and down over time. They think that they're just cyclical expenses. So they price things based on their employee and their pay, not based on input costs and commodity costs.
So to recap, Texas Roadhouse looks on track to deliver, I would say, much better than expected same-store sales. And while the cost inflation will likely be lower than expected, that's such a combination. It's ideal, and it's why the stock's rallied so strongly in response to the latest quarter. Now, on the conference call, CEO Jerry Morgan put things pretty simple. He said, quote, "Our strong results continue to reflect our operators' commitment to the consistency and quality of the food, the hospitality they provide, and our everyday value. The benefit of our long-term approach to the business and our focus on always prioritizing the guest experience is evident in the record sales, margin dollars, and net income for the first quarter," end quote. See, this is a great story. This is how it's supposed to work. You don't take the price. You don't gouge the people. You end up getting more people to come. You can take price a little bit, and then the costs go down. This is what business is about. So despite the fact that Texas Roadhouse operates in one of the more challenged subsectors of the restaurant industry, the full service space, I think it deserves to be in the upper echelon of restaurant stocks right now. This has been a long, great growth story, but right now in particular, Texas Roadhouse is killing.
Here's where he goes on to kind of give his recommendation for the stock.
Because they never drove the customer base away with aggressive price increases, as we know some have, making them a rarity in the restaurant space, one they can clean up now that cost pressures are fading away. Of course, after the latest one, the stocks are up 37% year-to-date, and up here it's quite expensive, 28 times this year's earnings estimate. But I like it. Bottom line, if you buy Texas Roadhouse stock at these levels, you're chasing it, I admit. So I think maybe it would be great if you were patient. Maybe the stock cools off a little before you start a position. But if you can't resist it after what I just told you, you know what? You got my blessing, because this is one terrific story.
There you go. There's Jim Cramer's take on Texas Roadhouse. Now, first of all, I agree with almost everything he said, aside for the fact that nobody's talking about it. There has been one person talking about it, but everything else he said about the company, I agree with. It's great. The company's executed great. They've been careful with their pricing power. They've stolen a lot of traffic from other restaurants, as I assume they would. They're consolidating a lot of traffic into their stores. And the numbers across the board look great. A lot of people say that this type of thing is random luck, or it's just, you know, you can't pick these type of stocks. But you can if you look at the fundamentals, if you look at the numbers. The reason that I chose Texas Roadhouse over all the other competitors, over Chili's, over, you know, Olive Garden, over Cheesecake Factory, over all these other stocks, is because of the fundamentals. It has more consistent revenue growth, more consistent free cash flow generation, has no long-term debt, has more consistent earnings growth. It was more reliable during the Great Recession, and the management's better managed and better operated than the other restaurants because they have better incentives for their operators on a per restaurant basis. So there's a reason that Texas Roadhouse has outperformed other restaurants, and that's not based on luck. But another thing that I'd like to highlight is that by the time Jim Cramer catches up to this and catches wind of these stocks, you'll notice that something's already occurred. By the time CNBC is talking about this stock, it's one of the best performing companies in the market year to date. It's up 40% currently year to date, not counting dividends. So it's on a huge, monstrous roll. It's on a huge streak. In the past 6 months, it's up 61%. The past 5 years, it's up 205%. Plus, the company, again, has paid quarterly dividends that are not small dividends. So I think that's the biggest takeaway here, is even though everything Jim Cramer said is correct, I think the stock is great, he's highlighting it at possibly one of the worst times, when the stock just went through an epic run. That's when they decide to shine a light on it. So if you're following the mainstream network, CNBC, this is what's going to occur. After a stock already goes through an epic run upwards, then they're going to shine light on it and people will chase the stock at that point. If you want to have market beating performance in the stocks, it's not the best idea to chase them when they just recently surged to all-time highs. It's better to buy them when there's weakness, when no one else is talking about them, when they're not being highlighted on CNBC. I bought Texas Roadhouse when it was $70 per share. Nobody else really talked about this stock. It had no positive sentiment, and that's the time to pile into companies that don't have positive sentiment but have incredibly strong fundamentals. Now, moving on from that, it's been a while since we've done an update on the Story Fund. If you're not aware, I have two portfolios. The primary one, the largest one, is called the Passive Income Portfolio. And then I have a secondary portfolio here called the Story Fund. Now, this one's smaller, but it has a specific reason for creating it. The reason I created the Story Fund was with the express goal of competing with the S&P 500. My goal is to beat the S&P 500 over a 5-year period. So from early 2021 until the end of 2025. And it's just a friendly competition. A lot of people say the S&P 500 is impossible to beat. It's super difficult to beat. So I thought it would be a fun competition to go against the S&P 500 and track it publicly every single week. That's what you can follow along and see whether I win or lose. Now, my strategy in outperforming the S&P 500 has been to concentrate into incredibly high quality companies that I believe have very limited downside and ample upside. Companies that have huge scalability, companies that have an enormous amount of operating leverage, companies that have moats that I believe are insurmountable. I want zero chance of losing against the S&P 500. So I've concentrated into companies that I think have incredibly small chance of failure and huge chance of success. Three of the positions that make up this portfolio are cloud companies, and that's not by random chance. You have Microsoft with Microsoft Azure, you have Google with Google Cloud Pro, and then you have the biggest one, Amazon, of course, with AWS. The reason that I've concentrated into public cloud is because I believe those companies are easy winners. They're going to continue to win with the cloud. The other segments of their businesses are amazing, but the cloud is the primary driver of intrinsic value. Amazon makes up 35% of the portfolio. Google makes up 20%. Microsoft makes up roughly 9.5%. So that's a huge portion of it. Then we have Netflix as another kind of outside bet that I've really leaned into. 30% of the portfolios in Netflix because I believe the company is going to be a large-scale streaming winner. I believe that the industry is consolidating, and I believe the economics are going to show through. We've already seen this company generate a lot of free cash flow, $7 billion in 1 year, and I think that's just the beginning. The operating leverage inherent in Netflix is massive, and I still believe the street is way off in their estimates for it. So Netflix is another company that I think will continue to be a winner. Now, this portfolio has really crushed it year to date. So far in 2024, it's just done amazing. To put this in perspective, if we filter by year to date, the money-weighted returns are 19.47%. So 19.5%. If we compare that against the S&P 500, SPY is up 9.5. And then the QQQ is up 9.42. So this year, we've done double the S&P 500 and the QQQ. And that leads us to the outperformance so far. In 2023 is where we made the big comeback. My portfolio is in blue. The S&P 500 here is in red. And you can see the story fund catching up against SPY in 2023. That's because companies like Amazon and Google and Netflix and all of them had enormous growth in 2023. But then even in 2024, we have this big spike right there. That's Amazon's earnings. Amazon went up after earnings. That caused the portfolio to go up. Netflix has recovered after its drop in earnings. And so the portfolio now is at a gain of 42.6% against the S&P 500 at 31%. So we have an 11% lead over SPY. And again, this is going to go on until the end of 2025. So far, so good. We're in the lead. In fact, we're gaining a bigger and bigger advantage. I think that advantage is going to widen over time. And the hope is that I don't barely beat SPY, but I beat it by a large margin. But either way, time will tell. I can't see the future. So if you want to see how this turns out, just tune in. I'll show you the progress every single week. That's all for this time. See you in the next one.